Okay, so today, Rose, who's celebrating her 4 years in recovery, has agreed to share for us. So the floor is yours, Rose.
Thank you, Louisa. Thank you for asking me to share. I'm going to say my name is Rose, and I'm a grateful member of Tosnua. I don't often say my name, but seeing as I said I'd be recorded, I thought I'd better do it. And that was what I came up with as the way to introduce myself. And I really am grateful to have found this group and to be part of it. And I didn't know what to talk about today, and I'm feeling unbelievably nervous. I haven't done much preparation, which takes me right outside my comfort zone. Basically, I would much rather have a script that I've spent a long time working on. But I'm trying to do things a bit differently. I'm trying to get less hooked up on the idea that it has to be perfect and just see. So I've made these really flimsy notes, and now I'm feeling like I shouldn't have bothered at all, because actually these flimsy notes are making me feel ner more nervous than having nothing at all. So what I thought about after Louisa asked me if I wanted to share for my anniversary was, I thought, what is an anniversary? What does it mean, a sober anniversary? So, I inevitably was casting my mind back, and I realized that a sober anniversary is a real mixed bag. And when I think to all the other shares I've heard from other people about anniversaries, it's not like a birthday. It's not all hearts and flowers and exciting things. Anniversaries are all tied up with some difficult memories as well as some good ones. So what does my anniversary mean to me? Well, first of all, I'm really happy to take what I can get out of it. So I'm happy to get your party poppers, and I'm happy to get nice messages in the chat, and I'm happy to get my half hour of attention by sharing, and I'm grateful to have that acknowledgement within myself and from others that it's a worthwhile achievement, that it's something special. And just worth marking. And I'm not very good at that. I know I desire it, that attention and that sort of people being nice to me. But I'm also quite resistant to it. I'm quite resistant to taking people being nice to me, if that makes any sense. And also, I would say about my anniversary, Louisa announced it as my recovery anniversary, and I don't feel that that's actually very accurate. I have had 4 years alcohol free. My recovery time is less than that, really. And I'll explain what I mean. I was thinking about my drinking. I don't often describe myself as an alcoholic, and I've talked about the day I didn't drink, the first day that I was not drinking quite often. But somebody said something to me the other day and made me think about the sort of immediate drinking in the last couple of days before I stopped. And on the 24th, I drank too much. I drank more than I normally do, because my pattern of drinking is I drink between 5:15 p.m. and 7 p.m. You could probably set your watch by it. That my drinking was really quite predictable in that sense. But on the 24th, I drank more than I should. And I don't think I drank over a longer period of time, but I just went for it. I went for it a bit, when I started at 5:15. I went for it faster than normal. And I know I drank more than I would normally do, more than I wanted, because I got a bit loud. I got a bit leery. I got a bit clumsy. And there were lots of stressful things going on. I don't want to delve too deep into the sort of surrounding things. I want to stick with how it was for me emotionally. But you know, I drank too much. And then that means in the middle of the night, I woke up with the, oh God, that was a mistake. Need to pee, got the hot flushes, you know, not able to sleep. It was annoying not to be able to sleep. And a lot of, well, you won't be having a drink tonight, will you? You know, and that was a stupid idea. And listing all the reasons why I wouldn't be having a drink the next day at 5:15. But 5:15 came. And I drank two half glasses of dregs from the bottles that were left in the fridge from the day before. I mean, that's the insanity. I didn't want to drink that Saturday, the 25th. I didn't need to drink. I had lots of things happening the following day for which it was really important that I got a good night's sleep. Two half glasses, this not going to do anything to me chemically. It didn't taste like the only thing those bottle half bottle, you know, half glasses of wine were good for was pouring their way down the sink. But I still drank them. And I remember thinking, oh, I do hope I don't have to share them with anybody else. And not only did I think that, I made sure I didn't have to share them with anybody else. I don't think I gave anybody a chance to ask to share them. I drank those two half glasses of wine. I mean, that's just insanity. There was no point to it at all. It was the obsession. I don't know what it was. And the next day went really badly, you know. And I hadn't, before all this, I had really had no thought of giving up drinking. I wasn't concerned about my drinking. As far as I'm concerned, my drinking reflected what I see portrayed to me in the media as a normal way for a middle-aged woman to drink. A pre-dinner drink and then share a bottle of wine with your husband. You know, every movie you watch, every TV program, you know, that's perfectly acceptable behavior. So I wasn't really thinking about my drinking, I wasn't thinking about controlling it or changing it. And the next day I had a really difficult day. Things went very wrong. I was highly stressed and I reached the end of my tether completely. And I was shutting down. You know, I'd done all I could in that day. Things were going wrong, but I'd made plans for the next day. And my father then offered us a drink where we were on the 26th. And he offered us a drink and ice. And into my mind came, I'm not having a drink now, and I am never going to drink again. And that's what happened to me. You know, I think some people might say, oh, she had a spiritual experience. God swept down and sorted it out for her. And that's not necessarily what I believe, but I know it didn't come from my conscious control. It didn't come from my willpower. It just came absolutely like a guillotine. And the honest, me being honest and real, is that I have never wanted to drink again since, despite all the crappy things that have happened since the 26th of January 2020. It just has not presented itself to me as something that's desirable or that I've wanted. And I've learned since I've come into recovery not to be complacent about that. I'm just trying to be honest with you about how it felt, that it felt absolute. But I'm so grateful because I don't know that I could have fought for my sobriety. You know, I've met people in these rooms who have to fight every day not to have a drink. And that hasn't been like that for me. And I've been thinking about it a lot recently. I just think I'm so grateful because I am not a striver. And it is not difficult at all for me to play the tape forward and see that where I was at, I was on the edge of a precipice. And my drinking was about to take me to places that I really don't think that I would have come back from, and that would they have killed me? I don't know. That's a bit dramatic, but you know, would have changed my life in ways that would really have not been at all what I want or what's good for me. So I'm really grateful that I don't have a desire to drink. So I stopped drinking on the 26th of January, and I haven't really had to do too much battle with alcohol since then. But I wasn't in recovery, and I wasn't any more manageable. My life was completely unmanageable still. The COVID pandemic hit, globally, domestically, things were just getting really, really unmanageable in my life. And I had no awareness around that at all at the time. Just wasn't coping at all well. And and also what happened, because I stopped drinking, I changed quite significantly. I changed some of my behaviors quite significantly. And actually, for my family, who were really, even though I was drinking, I was quite predictable. Our life was very predictable. I was very in control. I describe it as like I was the captain of the family ship. Everybody else towed the line. I knew where we were going. I knew what I was doing. And I was making all these significant changes sort of in myself emotionally and really not having any awareness around how that was impacting on my family. And that in actual fact, me making these unilateral changes to myself without having any awareness around how that was impacting on my family was really taking things unmanageable. And what happened at the end of 2021, in October 2021, I discovered that my husband had been acting out on one of his addictions for 6 months. And that there's my step one. That's when I hit the wall. That's when the road that I thought was stretching out in front of me just disappeared. And I thought, I know that I just went into complete shutdown. That feeling of dying but not really dying. I just couldn't see where I was going to go from there. Complete. What's the word in step one? Admitted that I couldn't control things, that everything was unmanageable, and but I'm not a helpless person. And I went looking for help. I've got the internet. I can go shopping on Amazon. I got books. I got sorted out, and within about a week, I was attending an anon program linked to my husband's addiction, and that is when I first came into what you would say is recovery. I joined a fellowship. I was working on it. And when I arrived in that Anon fellowship, I was in victim state. Look what this person has done to me, poor me. I expect, and I know that Anon groups have to deal with this when newcomers come in. That's just what happens at that moment. In the story. So I get into my Anon fellowship, and I do start learning quite quickly, and I start making some changes, and I start seeing that I can't do anything about my husband or these other people. All I can do is try and sort some things out for myself. And that is quite difficult, or I find that quite difficult in an Anon program. The requirement for membership is that somebody else has done a particular thing. So just the requirement for membership takes me away from myself a bit. And also in the Anon fellowship I was in, there were some very dominant and religious women who were controlling that fellowship. And I just could feel myself getting more and more trapped and more uncomfortable and not able to improve myself in this Anon fellowship. And that's when I went looking for something else, and when I found secular recovery. I mean, I found secular recovery by accident. I just thought, oh, I know what, I can try AA because I don't drink. They'll have to let me in, So that shows you how little I knew about AA. I thought I'll get away with going there because I don't drink, so they'll let me in. And of course, when if you look for AA fellowships, you've got much more choice than in some of the, in some of the other anonymous things. I certainly wouldn't have been able to find a secular fellowship, but for my the issues that I was facing at that time. So I went looking for secular stuff, and I think I went to one meeting, and basically a Tas Nua regular wrote me out a prescription for Tas Nua, is basically how I see it. She took one look at me, said, "Right, you need to go to Tas Nua," wrote down the name and number and the Zoom things, and said, "Off you go." You know, they have a meeting every day. And that was really great, because I turned up at Tas Nua and I wouldn't be able to put it into words, but I came home, you know, I was at home straight away. And maybe that might not even make sense on paper to anybody, but I just thought, yeah, this is where I need to be. And that's proved to be the case for me. And I don't know why, but I found it really supportive, really helpful. I feel I've achieved a lot of change since I came here. And, you know, for a while, my husband came to a lot of meetings with me, and my children have come to meetings at Tas Nua. And even though that doesn't happen very much now, that's been a really, really fundamental part of my recovery, that I've been able to integrate my family into that. Where am I? I've written one of these useless notes I've written is, where am I at today? So where I'm at today is, I come to Tas Nua meetings. I come to Tas Nua meetings, and they help me with check-in. They help me with a community and a fellowship connection. You know, this is the group where I think, you know, these people are my friends, and they've really got my back. You know, I feel comfortable here. But I also went back to my original Anon fellowship, not the same group. I found a group running out of Australia. I did some work on myself, but then saw I do also need separate support for myself as an Anon, you know. And I find running the two programs alongside is really helpful for me, and necessary. And that group is quite focused, it's traditional. We work on the literature. I'm with people who have had very similar experiences to me, so I can relate to them on specific issues rather than the sort of general relationship I have with people here. And I also attend CODA. I find CODA the most challenging thing to do. I don't feel at ease. I find the concepts quite difficult, but I know that it is relevant to me. You know, I can see that underlying any of the behaviors, the drinking, the control, the anxiety, the depression, underlying all those things is how I relate with other people and manage my relationships with other people. So I think the CODA work is important, but it's the work I find the most challenging. And I wanted to, just before I stop, talk about the tools. I wrote a list of the tools that I use to try and keep myself in good recovery. So that's not just not picking up a drink, that's just of improving myself, and keeping myself steady. And I attend Tas Nua meetings, I attend my Anon meetings, and I participate in my CODA meetings. What did I write? I write, I use discernment to make good decisions about how I spend my recovery time with whom. And I've put discernment without judgment. And I think I've got better at that. You know, I make the connections I need to, I offer the support I can, but I don't stay in places that aren't supporting my recovery or the people that are destabilizing my recovery. It might not be anything to do with them, it's their fault. It's just, you know, we're not in the right place together, then they're not, you know, I use my discernment to keep myself safe. I volunteer for service, found that really has helped me. But I try to be mindful of my skills and my limitations and what I've got capacity for. And if a serve, you know, if an opportunity for service comes up, I try and examine my motivations. You know, am I trying to people please? You know, am I looking for some sort of validation? I just have to be mindful about my motivations. I try to be honest about myself and stay in my reality. That's really important to me. No exaggeration, no minimizing. If I do that, I am definitely better. And on the same point, I try to communicate that to others. It's no good if I pretend you haven't upset me because I think it's my responsibility. I need to communicate with you about where I'm at in my own reality for there to be any chance of us to have a relationship or move forward or learn about each other. So I am trying to communicate honestly. A self-report, find that really helpful. So even though I don't think I'm at risk of drinking again, I self-report even the slightest thing. If I stare at the liqueur chocolates at the checkout for too long, I tell on myself in a meeting. If I dream about a glass of wine, I tell on myself in a meeting. If I was mean to the children, I try to self-report it. I feel it takes the sting out of it and it stops me pushing it inside myself where it can only do damage. And I try to be loving and supportive to others without taking on their problems and making them my responsibility. That is a challenge. I have to really watch rescuer type behaviors. I have got much better at that. I would have wanted to be every single person's fairy godmother. I want to persuade the whole world that living an alcohol-free life is just the best thing ever, and all that sort of thing. And I know that I can't afford to take myself to those places, that I just have to be mindful of myself and offer what I can without becoming emotionally entrenched in what other people are doing. And then there are tools. I also wanted to say there are tools I don't use. I'm not running a perfect recovery program. I'm just doing the best I can. So I'm not working steps. I've tried. I've made a bit of a pig's ear of it. I'm sort of semi-trying occasionally. I mean, that might come. I'm not saying it's not a good tool. I'm just saying I have to be honest with you and saying it's not working for me and I'm not managing it at the moment. We shall see. Watch this space. I don't read recovery literature either. I don't think I've managed to make it from the front cover to the back cover of any recovery book I've read. Don't know why particularly, but that's not something I'm using at the moment. And I don't have a sponsor or sponsees. I've tried both of those things and I find it really difficult to manage that relationship. I find the power imbalance very difficult when I'm what either end, I find that quite difficult and that hasn't worked for me, which I suppose is a good thing. If I'm not actively working the steps, then it's difficult to be either a sponsor or a sponsee. But maybe that'll come. And I don't pray, meditate, and the journaling's gone by the wayside as well. That's okay. You're not going to chuck me out for that. I'm allowed to work the program that works for me. And I'm doing okay. I'm doing okay. I'm really so grateful to be here. I'm really grateful to have found the fellowship. It really helps me stay steady and be able to cope with the things that life throws me. I've made some good friends, but I've also got lots of loving acquaintances here, and I feel very safe and welcome and supported in at Tusnua, and just knowing that the fellowship exists globally is something that's really helpful for me. It's sort of a feeling that I'll never have to be alone in being a complicated person. I'll never be alone in being a complicated person, and there'll always be somebody who I can turn to and who will listen to me. So I think that's me done, Louisa. I'd really like to hear from some other people, and I've spoken easily long enough. So I really want to say thank you to everybody who's here and anybody who listens to this, and particularly thank you to you, Louisa, for asking me. Thanks.